Right now, we are going to find out what is going on with Minnesota's moose population. When wildlife ecologist Scott Craven was on the show last Wednesday, a caller asked about the health of Minnesota's moose herd, and it seemed like a good topic to dig into a little more, so we're going to do just that. Michelle Karstensen is the Wildlife Health Program Supervisor for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. She's worked for the agency for 10 years. She has a Bachelor's of Science in Animal Science from Cornell University and a master's and PhD degrees in wildlife conservation from the University of Minnesota. Her program works on wildlife health issues that involve game species, including wolf, deer, elk, moose, and waterfowl. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Lou Cornicelli has worked for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources for 12 years and has been the wildlife research manager for two of those. Prior to that, he was the statewide big game program coordinator, and he also has a PhD from the University of Minnesota. He spent most of his career working with people and large ungulates. Lou, also great to have you on the show with us.
Oh, very good. How are you doing?
Doing well. And so glad that because a caller last week kind of alerted us to or reminded us of the issue with the moose. And it seemed like a really good opportunity to learn more about the situation. But I think it would be great first to learn about moose in kind of general terms. Michelle, what kind of habitat do they do best in?
Well, they're more associated with a boreal forest habitat, so they like the forest zone where there's adequate browse species available to them and a lot of water resources, so they do aquatic foraging, and they tend to do well in those kind of colder climates, too. So they're a large-bodied animal, very built to withstand cold temperatures and the long winters that this year has proven to reveal. So they're kind of restricted to our northeastern part of our state at this point in time.
And Lou, what other parts of North America do they inhabit?
All across the northern U.S., well, certainly going up through Canada and Alaska, but Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Upper New York has a small moose population, and then a different subspecies of moose is found in the Intermountain West, Utah, Colorado, Montana, Wyoming. So, and then again, going all the way up through Canada into Alaska. As Michelle just mentioned, they're a boreal species, at least our subspecies is. So this is pretty much, for the Canadian subspecies, which is what we have, this is the southern extent of their range.
And boreal means northern forests, is that correct?
Northern forests,
okay.
Sorry, yeah.
And do they live, it seems like, for instance, Scandinavia would be a good place for them as well.
Correct, yeah. Moose are an international species, basically. So all the, if it's a cold climate and the habitat's right, there's typically going to be moose there. But the subspecies, I think, is slightly different in Europe. But moose are the primary game species in northern Europe, Norway, Sweden, those countries.
And I know one thing that we've learned about elk here in Wisconsin is that they don't tend to move around a lot. They seem to stay kind of where they find a good place. They don't feel the need to range a lot. What about moose? Do moose range much, Michelle?
They're more similar to elk in that sense that they don't range a whole lot. So the moose that we have in northeast Minnesota, their home ranges, they can migrate some distance, maybe 10 miles or 12 miles, to a distinct winter range that might offer them a different mix of habitat. But many stay within the same home range. But they're not really moving 20, 30 miles around. They're usually within a much smaller area.
And, Lou, what do moose eat?
Woody browse, similar to what white-tailed deer would eat, as compared to Wisconsin's elk population. Elk are grazers, so they eat the same foods that cattle would typically eat, grasses principally, but moose are browsers. So any food that is palatable to white-tailed deer is also going to be palatable to moose. And as Michelle mentioned, they do key on a lot of aquatic vegetation seasonally. So woody browse is the primary food.
And so, Lou, does that mean that a moose population and a deer population would be in competition for those resources?
Well, I guess we'll talk about that. Yeah, there's certainly some competition, not necessarily for directly with food, because obviously moose can browse a lot higher than a deer can. So a moose is going to be able to access, even though they're going to eat the same shrub, much higher off the ground than a deer could. So in terms of direct competition for woody browse, it's probably not significant. Where we get into it is the health issues that Michelle can key on, that indirect competition related to disease.
Mm, and we'll definitely talk about that. But you just kind of referred to the size of a moose and the height of a moose. How tall does a moose get?
What are they, 6 feet at the shoulders, Michelle, give or take?
At least, yep.
Wow.
Above both of our heads.
Wow. And then there's a large head and then a large antler rack, too. So it's a really significant animal.
Very
they
large.
Are.
Yes.
And how many babies do they have and how often, Lou?
They typically have a calf every year, at least one calf every year. A small percentage of them will have two. And every once in a while, pregnancy rates run in the 80-odd percent range. So they'll typically have at least one calf 4 out of 5 years if you're thinking about the individual animal. And some will have two. I forget what percentage it is, maybe up to a quarter or so we'll have two calves.
And that would be twins, you mean?
Twins, yeah.
Okay. No. And do we have a significant moose population in Wisconsin, or have we ever, Luke? Are you able to answer that?
I'm not. I don't know what Wisconsin's moose population might be. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Michelle might know. Michelle.
Yeah, right now it's very, reportings are very rare. So they just, they wander through. They had one killed by a car in Crandon last year. But they're really not a viable population as far as breeding and thriving in Wisconsin. But historically, there might have been more moose in that area when we had caribou. So.
Oh, sure. We are talking about the situation facing Minnesota's moose population with Michelle Carstensen and Lou Cornicelli. They are both with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and they are working on this issue. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you ever seen a moose? Where was it? And are you concerned about the status of moose in our next door neighbor and what that might mean for animal health in our own backyard as well? We'd love to have you join us. So, Lou, I know that you've done a lot of work on wildlife management. What is the history, or what has kind of been the philosophy of moose management in the upper Midwest?
Ebbs and flows, I guess. Historically, if you think back pre-European settlement, at least northern Minnesota was likely caribou and moose range. Then with forest disturbance and pretty active forest management, it became a white-tailed deer moose habitat type, and that's what we've been managing probably for 100 years or so. Our state population was more robust years ago, where we had moose in the northwestern part of the state and then further south than we have right now. But right now, we've pretty much lost most of our moose population, and now we're just left with the northeast, which is the focus of a lot of the research. But those moose populations have probably historically increased over time. Now they're back on the down, on the decline, and that increase again is likely related to pretty significant forest changes over the last 100 years.
Mm. And Michelle, you're working on the moose mortality study that's going on. First, what were the signs that there is a problem with the Minnesota moose herd?
Well, as Lou mentioned, we used to have moose population in the northwest part of Minnesota as well, and that was in the 80s, roughly around 4,000 animals. It was a population that was hunted, and then that started to decline really rapidly in the 80s and 90s. At this point, we have less than 100 moose in northwest Minnesota. And there was some research that was initiated in the 90s looking at that, and what they found was a variety of health-related issues that seemed to be compromising the moose. It wasn't really predator-driven. There were very few wolves in that part of the state at this time, and hunting wasn't a major cause of the decline. It appeared to be that moose seemed to be on the fringe of their southern range and possibly exposed to warming climates, which, stressed them and made them more able to get sick and die from different pathogens. So while we watched the northwest population drop, we paid special attention on the moose that we had left in northeast Minnesota. And work was initiated in the early 2000s to look at that population, and they also noticed a very high rate of non-hunting-related mortality, which was over 20%. And that was concerning because in other populations that Lou mentioned in northern latitudes, non-hunting mortality should be more in the 8 to 12% range. And we're really at double that pace in Minnesota, which is not sustainable to maintain or grow a herd.
Well, and it also, from what you said earlier about them not being animals that range on a wide landscape, it seems it would be especially concerning because it's happening in both of those herds seemingly independently.
Yeah, correct. What we're seeing now in the north, in the northeast, is modeling what happened in the northwest, but actually at even more of a steeper decline. From 2006, we were at just over 8,000 moose in northeast Minnesota, and we're at about half that now. So we're looking at a 50% drop in, you know, 8 years.
And you, I just want to go back to something you said. We didn't cover it in kind of the Moose 101 earlier in the show, but are wolves the main predator for moose?
In Minnesota, wolves are a primary predator of adult moose, and both bears, black bears, and wolves can kill baby moose or moose calves.
Mm-hmm. And there is hunting as well?
There used to be. We closed the hunting season last year.
Okay. And this very precipitous decline in the moose population in Minnesota, Michelle, are you seeing that happening in herds, say, in Canada as well?
Well, there's some concern in some of the Canadian provinces like Ontario and parts of Saskatchewan where numbers are declining in some of their more traditional moose ranges, but have been expanding in other places that they hadn't really seen them, like some of their ag zones. So it's kind of like moose are redistributing themselves in certain provinces, and they're not really sure what's driving that.
Hmm.
Other states like Maine and New Hampshire have launched studies very similar to our mortality study, looking at what might be driving what they fear is some population declines in their states as well.
And is there, how would I say, collaboration between the different areas that are working to help or to find out what's happening to their moose population? Lou?
Yeah, there's a lot of collaboration and coordination, especially as it relates to our border states. Not everyone, we're the only state really undertaking this level of research. As Michelle just indicated, other states are looking at our projects, but Utah's got a mortality study they just started. I know Maine is looking at one as well. So a lot of states are trying to replicate our methods to answer some of their population questions. But we do collaborate pretty closely with other states, and we share ideas and data, results, and the whole gamut of information, because there's really not a lot of people. The issue is important to a lot mm-hmm. of people, but there's not a lot of folks that are specialized in doing this kind of work. So
sure.
we work pretty closely.
And we will talk more about the state of Minnesota's moose population after a look at the news from NPR. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. I hope you'll stay tuned. There are a lot of incredible animals that live in the upper Great Lakes and Great Plains regions, but it's hard to imagine one more impressive than the moose. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Unfortunately, the Minnesota moose population is declining rapidly, and biologists are trying to find out why. We have two people with us today who are working on that issue. Lou Cornicelli has worked for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources for 12 years and has been the wildlife research manager for 2. And prior to that, he was the statewide big game program coordinator. Lou, thanks again for spending time with us today.
My pleasure.
And Michelle Karstensen is the Wildlife Health Program Supervisor for the Minnesota DNR, and she's worked there for 10 years. And her program works on wildlife health issues that involve game species, including wolves, deer, elk, moose, and waterfowl. Michelle, again, good to have you with us.
Happy to be here.
Well, we definitely want to get back to talking about what efforts are being made to find out what's going on with the moose and then to address it. But we do have a couple of people on the phone who have been waiting a while. So let's go first to Mike in Black River Falls. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just wanted to share two stories that maybe they could comment on. The first one happened quite a few years ago in Yellowstone. My son and I were out there, and we were driving on one of the park roads, and I happened to glimpse the sight of some animal in the woods, and we stopped the car, called up the bank, and partially into the woods, and here it was a female. She just had a calf, and so we just laid there and watched her, and all of a sudden, all kinds of people started to show up, but they weren't crouching. They were walking in the woods with their camera. And having grown up on a farm here in Wisconsin, I know a cow about the same size can sometimes go crazy near her calf. I said to my son, let's get out of here before something bad happens. And the second one was I'm a truck driver, and I hauled a neon assigned to a business in central Maine, and they apologized that the forklift operator wasn't there. He was in the hospital, so what happened? And they said, well, last week when he was driving his pickup truck to work, he hit a moose, totaled his truck. They said this morning he was driving his wife's car, hit a moose, pulled out her car, wound up in the hospital, get stitches in his forehead.
Oh, my goodness.
So anyways, they got quite a population in Maine. If a guy can hit two in as many weeks.
Right. Wow.
I just wanted to share those.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Mike. And Mike brings up a couple really good points there. I think one, Michelle, if we are fortunate enough to actually see a moose in the wild, what's the right etiquette? What should we do?
Well, the right etiquette would be not to approach. So moose can be very defensive, and as the caller indicated, especially ones with a calf, and not necessarily just a newborn calf, even a calf that's months old, they have a very protective characteristic. Mm. So, yes, you know, if you encounter one, back away slowly would be the best form of behavior around a moose. And, you know, males in the rut or in the breeding period can be unpredictable as well. So keeping your distance is a good idea.
And, Lou, you know, obviously car deer accidents are a big thing in Wisconsin. I'm guessing in Minnesota as well. I can't even imagine the kind of damage that a moose could do in an accident.
Yeah, correct. Maine certainly has more moose than we do, but we hit them occasionally in this state as well. And yeah, I mean, it's a classic defensive driving, and the difference with moose is that they're likely taller than the hood of your car. So
wow.
It's a good way to get seriously injured. So you really need to be careful, especially when animals are most active around dawn and dusk. But yeah, certainly it can be far worse than hitting a deer, and we do get a few hit every year.
One of our coworkers here at Wisconsin Public Radio said she was riding a bicycle down a gravel road in Sweden, and suddenly a moose ran in front of her, and she was able to avoid the collision. I suggested maybe trying to ride between its legs would have been another option.
Go under.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Well, we are talking about the decline in the moose population in Minnesota. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Marika Suval is our on-air producer today. Michelle, before the news, we were just kind of getting into what the possibilities might be for causing this really precipitous decline in the population. What are some of the possibilities that you're looking at or maybe that have already been ruled out?
Well, we've just finished the first year of our study and just recaptured some animals and put some new collars out this past winter. So what we learned in year one, we had roughly 110 animals that we collared last winter, and we had 21% mortality rate. And that was about equally split between predator-related causes, which are wolf-related causes, and health-related. And on the wolf end, if a wolf kills the moose, we call it a wolf kill, but we also note any other predisposing conditions that animal might have had, because wolves are very good at selecting their prey by being able to identify something that would give the wolf the advantage.
Sure.
And we've documented in at least 4 of our 8 cases that there was some predisposing condition, whether it was a brain lesion or other injury or a leg limp that moose had prior to being taken down by wolves. And on the health side, we've documented some cases of winter tick mortality, brain worm, which is a parasite that's in their brain that can cause death, and also liver fluke-related issues, as well as some unknowns that we're really still trying to understand.
And a liver fluke, that's a worm, is that correct? Is that a parasite?
It's a parasite, yep, that's transported mostly through the deer-moose interaction, just like brain worm. So that's kind of what Lou was getting at before, with some interactions between deer and moose that might not be strict habitat-related competition for food, but could spread diseases more between the two species.
And you also, did you say winter tick?
Correct.
And tell us about that.
Winter ticks live mostly their life on a moose, and they quest or get on the moose kind of late summer, and they stay on the moose the entire winter and fall off in April, typically. And they reproduce on the moose, and there can be tens of thousands of these ticks on one individual. And that can really require a moose to replace its entire blood supply every other day. And they itch. So then the moose is scratching because their skin is irritated, and they can break some of their outer guard hairs. And there's kind of a theory of moose that are called ghost moose, if you've heard that term before, but what that really means is a moose that's lost its outer protective guard hairs, and really just the undercoat is exposed. They look a lot lighter in color. And that can really compromise a moose to be able to survive tough winter conditions if their coat is damaged to that extent.
Sure.
So ticks can be very detrimental to moose. And in Maine and New Hampshire, they seem to have more mortality associated with ticks than we have really attributed in Minnesota. But it goes on cycles with good tick years and bad tick years.
Marina in Madison has something to add, so let's go there. Hi, Marina.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to tell you we were quite excited. We own some property about 10 miles northeast of Eagle River, and it's right between Phelps and Eagle River. And in early December, we had a trail cam, and there was a moose. Just a spectacular photograph of this moose.
That must have been quite a surprise.
It was a very big surprise and exciting, but it hasn't been sighted since. There are several web, cameras around, but haven't found any tracks or anything since.
Wow. Well, thanks for that call. So it sounds like Lou and Michelle that we have some in Wisconsin, but certainly not as many as Minnesota does.
Yeah, correct. And the Upper Peninsula of Michigan has a moose population as well, so there's always a chance that one wanders over from that direction.
Sure. Let's go back to the phones and Don in Boscobel. Hi, Don.
Hi. When I was a kid, we had a cabin up south of Leech Lake, south of Walker, Minnesota. And one day we saw a moose swimming across the little bay we were on. It was a bit in the mid-60s, actually, and we assumed it was a cow. She walked out in the forest on the other side. It was really cool. But I went back recently, and there's cabins everywhere. And I'm curious, is development around the lakes and waterways and just in the forest in general part of the problem? And also, what about global warming and climate change? Is that going to affect the moose range?
Thanks for that call, Don. Michelle?
Yeah, I think there's always an impact of human presence, and disturbance in an area. And I think where, you're talking about in Walker, I think moose had kind of been declining in that area, again, since the 80s. But whether it can be, totally modeled by human encroachment, I'm not sure if we can say that. But if we get onto the question about, global warming or climate change, we do know that winters have been warming in the last couple decades. And with moose having such a thick coat, in particular their winter coat, they have a very difficult time dissipating heat in warmer winters. And you think about, what's a warm winter? But anything over 40 degrees and a moose can be panting. So for a moose in a winter coat, warm winter months can be very stressful. And there is, some reason to believe that that might be predisposing them to certain diseases or parasites, that if they were feeling less stressed, they might be able to fight off more effectively.
Well, and Lou, he also brought up the question about access to water, and not just water as water, but water as you were saying that they eat aquatic plants and things like that. Can development have an encroaching impact on the moose?
It certainly could. We haven't directly measured that, but certainly disturbance, loss of habitat is always a big issue for just about every species. So, the cabin development has certainly increased all across this state everywhere. But we had moose, we had moose in the Northwest, and really that level of habitat change or human development didn't change that much over the time that we lost moose. So it probably could have some effect, but likely not in the big picture.
Mm-hmm. Caller Rich from East Troy wanted to ask kind of a similar question. To what degree would invasive water species like milfoil, for example, affect water quality, and could those affect the health of a moose population?
Oh, probably not. I mean, if you think about the habitat, at least in Minnesota, that moose inhabit, it's not really most of it's state, county, and federal lands. A lot of it's inaccessible by motorized vehicles. So likely not from that perspective, just simply the remoteness of where they live and the fact they can eat a pretty good diversity of plant types. And I don't know if they specifically like milfoil or not, but the aquatic vegetation is a seasonal part of their diet, but they also eat a lot of young browse, young trees, young shrubs, that kind of stuff.
So, Michelle, you were talking about the ways that you're actually getting data on individual moose and therefore, you know, extrapolating out on the moose population. So you're fitting them with a tracking device? Is that the main source of the data?
Yeah, we have a new technology collar that's actually a GPS collar linked to a satellite system called Iridium Satellites, and there's 66 of them circulating the globe. And it's a much more advanced method than what used to be done with wildlife monitoring projects, relying on mostly planes or helicopters to fly and listen for the moose. In this situation, the data comes to us directly through the satellite to us in our offices. So we can watch our moose every day from our desks.
Wow.
And what that really gives us as an advantage is that when a moose dies, it can send a text message through the satellite system to our smartphones, enabling us to respond to that animal's mortality within a very timely frame, which we're trying to do within 24 hours.
So basically you get information that the animal has passed away, and then you can go recover it so you can actually get even more data about what might have happened.
Absolutely. We're trying to get there within 24 hours, and if we can get the entire animal out and brought down to the University of Minnesota's diagnostic lab. But they're very large, as we discussed earlier,
right.
So it's not always possible. In cases that we can't retrieve the entire animal, we do a very extensive field necropsy to try to learn what may have caused its death.
Wow. Bob in Port Washington is next. Let's go there. Hi, Bob.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'll just kind of set this up. I do quite a bit of deer hunting in northern Wisconsin, in Nicolet and Shawangon Forest. And I've had my share of moose encounters personally and noticed the recent paranoia over mountain lions, cougars in Wisconsin, the deer hunters claiming that it's going to demolish the deer population, which I don't believe. But do you think that between that and wolf predator type of thing, this could be ramping up the moose, the disappearance of the moose?
Thanks for that call. Lou, do you want to take that?
Yeah, I can take that. I lived out west for a bunch of years, so I'm familiar with lion predation. And the easiest way to describe lion predation is killing moose is a rough way to make a living if you're a mountain lion. They do it occasionally out west, but you have to remember that a lion kills an animal by itself. So it sometimes doesn't end well for the lion when they try and kill moose. So they typically key on smaller animals like deer. Wolves certainly are the major source of predator related mortality of moose in this state because they do it as a group. And can they drive a population? Not typically when that population is high enough and there aren't other mortality factors going on, but certainly when an animal's health is compromised or when that population is lower, they can influence the trajectory of that population. So it's kind of a complex answer, but even if there were a sustained population of lions in either Minnesota or Wisconsin, moose wouldn't be their primary prey. It'd be deer. And for wolves, certainly that's a contributing factor for mortality in both calves and adults. But the underlying factor that concerns us, at least with respect to adults, are those health problems that we're seeing.
And Michelle, there was an email from listener Tom, and he wonders if you could talk about, he said specifically, the Isle Royal wolf-moose relationship, especially in light of the lake freezing over this winter, which means that it's a lot easier to get from the mainland to the island.
Yeah, Isle Royal's had one of the longest-standing natural studies going on without, you know, human involvement for over 50 years. And it's a very unique dynamic of predator-prey relationship to document, where the cycles of moose increase followed by wolf increase and then moose decline followed by wolf decline has been, you know, documented thoroughly. And one thing different about Isle Royal is they don't have deer, so they don't have liver flukes and brainworm in moose there. They do have winter tick issues, and sometimes winter tick has really driven the population down, and other times it's been over browse when moose have gotten a little bit high. But currently there's less wolves on the island than they've had at different times, and there's a lot of concern right now that the wolf population is very inbred and may be extirpated shortly, and discussions going on about whether or not anybody will interfere in that complex at this point in time.
Let's take a call from Sally in Middleton. Hi, Sally.
Hi.
Hi.
Interesting topic, and I wouldn't be so interested if I hadn't seen one, because they really are quite an arresting animal to see. My daughter and her family live out in Spokane, Washington, which is pretty much due west from here. We were hiking around a relatively small lake. It wasn't a pond. It was a lake. And looking up to the one side, it was like he was posing. It was like it was, you know, just a beautiful scene with this elk just stationary, and he was just beautiful. Over here, she, but I'm sure he was well aware of and was watching us just traipsing around. Well, it was a big lake, but it's really something to see them in the wild.
Hmm. And yeah, I have never seen a moose in the wild, but I would very much like to. But I will take your advice, Michelle, and keep my distance.
That's good.
Well, Michelle, so you have data from the first year of the mortality study. What's the next step? What are you going to use with the information you have to further narrow down what might be going on?
Sure. As I mentioned, we just started year two, so we're hoping to maintain our sample size of over 100 animals with radio collars for at least 3 years. And with the life of the collars, we're looking at about an 8-year overall project, but we want, you know, answers on the short end, because we might not have more than a decade to really understand what's going on with moose to make some changes if possible. So we're hoping within the next couple of years that some of these causes will surface a little bit more and show some trends that we might be able to drive some management actions on to hopefully reverse the decline or stabilize it if it's even possible.
And if it turns out to be one of those things that you mentioned earlier, the winter tick issue, the liver fluke issue, the brainworm issue, are there ways that those can be addressed, Michelle?
Well, we could address deer numbers if we decided that that those diseases were a primary driver in the moose decline, because deer is important in transmitting those. And that's something that, as wildlife managers, we can adjust deer populations in moose range. We might also be able to do some additional habitat manipulations that target ways to get rid of some of those terrestrial snails that are in the environment spreading these diseases as part of the cycle, with prescribed burning and that kind of stuff. But going across moose range and trying to impact these kind of parasites, you know, is a real significant challenge.
Right.
And not one that we know that we could really have a positive impact on.
Right. Lou, is there a point where the herd will have declined so much that it's past the point of recovery?
It could. I mean, that's what happened in the Northwest. Despite habitat improvement projects, despite some research we had done, we had very low deer densities in that part of the state, and we still lost moose. The numbers are low enough that we don't even survey that population anymore, because the cost of doing the survey far outweighs our ability to estimate the number. So certainly at a 15% rate of decline that we're seeing in the Northeast, we'd reach that in, like Michelle said, 10 or 15 years at the most. So, yes, I mean, that's entirely possible, and it's our hope that with all this work we're doing between my agency and several universities, Duluth, UMN, here in the Twin Cities, that we can come up with a suite of recommendations to make some changes that might positively benefit moose. But the reality is that may not be possible. But I think we'd be remiss if we didn't at least make a run at it, because this is really our only chance.
Right. And Michelle, if people want to keep up to date on this issue, is there a good way to do that?
Yeah, we have a website through the Minnesota DNR homepage that you can link on for moose management and research, and that can keep folks up to date on the study, and has other links there to what we're doing with moose.
All right. Well, thank you both for spending time with us today and updating us on this. I hope that we can have you back when there's more information, and hopefully some positive news. Michelle Carstensen is the Wildlife Health Program Supervisor for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. She's worked with the agency for 10 years. Michelle, thanks so much for spending time with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Lou Cornicelli has worked for the Minnesota DNR for 12 years, has been the Wildlife Research Manager for 2, and prior to that, he was the statewide Big Game Program Coordinator. Lou, thanks for sharing your knowledge and expertise with us.
Absolutely. Great to be on.
And we will keep updated on that situation with the Minnesota Moose. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller this week. And tomorrow at 11, we'll find out what the top consumer complaints were in Wisconsin for 2013. And we'll have consumer protection advice as well. And on Friday, it will be Garden Talk, special information for brand new gardeners. I hope you'll stay tuned. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.